Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Tuesday, everyone, and welcome back to the HD View Ask Dr. Goodman Show. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host, and tonight our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you dial in, just press 1. I'll cue you into the show. You can ask Dr. Goodman questions live. Please tell all your colleagues, friends, and family about Health HD Radio and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming shows. Thanks to all of you, we now have 25,000 listeners. Amazing. Tonight we will be discussing a little controversial subject, the drug lithium. Read Dr. Goodman's new article on our website at www.hddrugworks.org. It's titled NP03 Lithium. I think it's zero or is it O? I don't know. A potential new drug for HD. NP03 is a new drug from Medicis Pharma that delivers lithium in a water and oil microemulsion that allows for much lower, 15 times lower, therapeutic dosing. We will be talking to Dr. Goodman just in a second about that. Wanted to preface the show tonight to let everybody know that I will be taking a sabbatical. I'll be returning on October 15, and I will be taking some much-needed rest. And though I will be returning in October, mid-October, I will be rerunning some of the best of the best shows from then until now. So still, tune in every Monday and listen to Help for HD, the HD View, Help for JHD, the JHD View, and Help for HD News Channel episodes and Ask Dr. Goodman shows. There's lots of good information out there. And so now I'd like to welcome Dr. Goodman. How are you tonight?
I'm very good, thank you. And yeah, I'm glad you're taking a well-deserved rest.
Ah, thank you. I'll be back. I've had strict instructions from my son. You are not quitting the show. You will be back. You just need a rest.
Yes, very good.
Yeah, so let's talk about the newest article. And I noticed HD Buzz has an article in there, too.
Which fortunately says about the same thing.
Yeah, written by Carly Desmond. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good that we're talking about it now so that we have it at the forefront of what's happening in on the Internet. But tell us, is it NP03 or NP03?
It's a zero.
Ah, okay.
You know, when drug companies have a new drug, they give it a number and some letters, and it's like with ACR-16, and it's partly to be able to identify it, but not to give too much information to some other drug company.
Okay. Well, now this is lithium, which is an old drug. So tell us a little bit about how it's been used in the past.
Real old drug that's been used a long time.
It's a metal, right?
It is a metal.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a salt. I mean, the form that it is a metal when the molecule is by itself, but it's usually made into a salt, and it's a salt that we take,
mm-hmm.
and it's something that is similar to. What happens to it in the body is it's very similar to the ions sodium and potassium in our bodies, and
mm-hmm.
calcium, those very important ions that involve cell health and changes in those concentrations across cell membranes and within cells can cause lots of havoc. And distress in cells and cause them to be damaged and then to die. So lithium is a salt that can work at various receptors in a similar way to the salt, potassium, and calcium salts.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Now, it can be very toxic. Right.
Yes, you'd ask me how it could be used, and it's been used for manic depressive or bipolar illness.
Mm-hmm.
And it is quite effective. You know, it doesn't help everyone, and it doesn't cure it, but it has been quite, it is quite an effective drug if it can be tolerated. The problem with lithium has been that there's a very small difference between the dosage of drug that is effective and the dosage of drug that is toxic. Mm. So you have to be very, very careful measuring levels as you go, and you can have a therapeutic level and still have toxic side effects in certain individuals. So it has to be monitored very carefully for toxicity. And if it's used long term, you know, your chances of having a toxic reaction as time goes on, it gets greater in terms of particularly kidney dysfunction. Most of that kidney dysfunction is reversible, but probably not all of it once the drug is stopped. Mm-hmm. It isn't used as much in the last decade because other mood stabilizing drugs are available that have better safety profiles, things like Depakote or Tegretol, oxcarbazepine, et cetera, things that are often used also for seizures. Mm-hmm. Can be very good at stabilizing mood without giving as many side effects as lithium does. So it's been displaced greatly by these other effective drugs that have fewer side effects. Lithium is mostly reserved now for people who fail those other drugs, mm-hmm. the treatment of their manic depression.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it is used presently.
And bipolar disorder, and they're using it. Are they still using it for Huntington's?
I don't know of anyone who's using it for Huntington's presently,
mm-hmm.
unless there are manic depressive symptoms that are not controlled by the safer other mood stabilizers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Medicis Pharma is reformulating it? Is that what's happening?
I think this is a little biopharma in Arizona
mm-hmm.
that is not interested in making new drugs, but is interested in finding ways to deliver effective drugs. You know lithium's effective, so if you can just get more into the cell without exposing the rest of the body to higher dosages of it, then you will have a much bigger therapeutic window. You will have a good effect with little or no side effects. And so what they do is they put it in a special formulation that allows that to happen, at least in these mouse models.
Okay, then how is the delivery different?
It is given into, it goes across the mucosal membranes. In the mice, they gave it rectally. Because it's very hard to give a medicine into the, have a mouse hold it in its cheek.
True.
So they gave it the other way. But absorption is probably better in, it would be kind of a liquidy sort of gel, I would assume, that then is put into your cheek and you hold it there and it gets absorbed that way. I suspect if you swallow it, then it would be oily emulsion would be hydrolyzed or digested in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why they're not giving it that way. They're avoiding that. But it's being very well absorbed through the mucous membranes in the mouth. And there are other medications that are given like that, you know, like nitroglycerin, things like that, mm-hmm. get into the system quickly and effectively that way.
So then what is the effect of lithium on the neurons or?
Well, it has a lot of effect on neurons, even though it's an old drug, been around a long time. No one knows exactly what it does, and it probably, part of the difficulty in knowing that is it probably does a lot of things because it's so much like the active cations, the sodium and the potassium that are so, building blocks of our cells. It's going to interact at lots of different levels. It works within various neurotransmitter systems, the serotonin one, norepinephrine one that has to do with depression and mood. Glutamate is probably, the thought is, at least for Huntington's, where neurons in the medium, spiny neurons, the ones that are most damaged, are hyper-excited. They're very sensitive and overstimulated. Like lots of overstimulation situations, you get tired and you give out. And I think that's an oversimplistic way of saying what happens to the spiny neuron, but it's not so far from incorrect, I don't think. Mm-hmm. Not so far from correct. And it appears that lithium quiets that down, modulates it, so it's not hyper-excitable.
Now, we're talking about the mouse model. It's being studied in YAC mouse model. Is that
in the YAC mouse model?
Okay.
That was the first model that Michael Hayden and his lab made. It was the first mouse model that put the full Huntington gene into the mouse genome. Previously, just fragments had been put in.
Oh, wow.
Like the R6-2 and that whole link, those mice all have just the first part of the Huntington gene. The YAC model has the entire length of the gene.
Mm-hmm.
It's different from the mouse that Marcy McDonald has made, though, because the YAC mouse doesn't have the Huntington gene. Even though it's the full one, it doesn't have it in the same place as is normal for the human gene, whereas Marcy McDonald's does.
Okay. So then what is the life span of a mouse, and how would they...
About 2 years. The yak lives about 2 years, and so does the full-length called knock-in mouse of Marcy McDonald.
Okay.
It doesn't die of Huntington's. It dies of old age. And as does the yak has many more symptoms than the Marcy McDonald knock-in mouse at 2 years. And that's because there's more than one gene per mouse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one gene per per the mouse chromosome.
Okay.
In the yak model.
Mm-hmm.
In Marcy McDonald's model, there's just one. So it's her mouse is at least, when you look at genes, is more closer to the human, the way it presents in human Huntington's.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at biologic.
When do they administer the NP03 to the yak mouse?
The yak gets symptomatic at about 3 months or so.
Okay.
So they gave this medication at 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave it before the yak had even its first symptoms.
Okay.
So they gave it in what we would call a pre-HD mouse, or before symptoms. So they gave it early. There had been some old clinical trials a long time ago using lithium, it's also been done in other neurodegenerative conditions too, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, and there's been conflicting reports of whether that was beneficial in Lou Gehrig's disease or not, but it wasn't greatly so.
You mean in mouse model or in human?
No, wasn't clear, in human study in ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. There have been conflicting small studies, one suggesting some benefit and the next one not.
Mm-hmm.
But that was with the old lithium and also in people with ALS who are already symptomatic.
Okay.
So the argument that folks are making is for this drug is to give it as early as possible before those neurons are very damaged, and then perhaps damage will be prevented.
Mm. Now, it's a microemulsion. Now, the I'm curious about the blood-brain barrier. If it's a microemulsion formula, does that mean that the particles are smaller? Is there...
Well, they're very small particles, and what it is mm-hmm. you put the whatever ion or molecule inside these very tiny droplets that contain both an oil and water.
Now, is that a nanotechnology?
Yeah, very tiny. Now, you're going to. I don't know very much about the physics of mm-hmm. microemulsions, but. What it does is it gives a, it's, you can think of it as a little a bubble,
mm-hmm.
with some liquid and this ion or molecule inside, but it's surrounded by this film, for lack of a better word, this emulsion film mm-hmm. that gives, there's a whole lot of surface to it, so it's round and tiny, but so the volume of it on the inside is very small, but the surface area is very big in relation, I mean, it, with the ratio of it. And that allows it, the emulsion that they have allows, have molecules in it, in this
that's kind of
oily water mixture that helps it get through cell wall membranes.
Okay. So that's why it's a mucosal delivery.
I believe, well, you know, I don't know. I suspect, I don't know the pharmacology of that preparation.
Oh.
I don't think that they have let that become public, but they want it to bypass the gut for sure. And getting it into, you know, you're still, when it goes through buccal mucosa, it still gets into veins, and then it gets delivered. It will get delivered then to brain.
But because of the nanotechnology or microemulsion, it does pass through the blood-brain barrier?
This one obviously does,
mm-hmm.
since there was an effect in brain. How they showed that it got it, whether they showed in any other way that it got into brain, you know, I don't know.
Mm. Now, are they going to be doing human trial on this then?
Well, mm-hmm. I would think so. I mean, if it's been beneficial in mice and it's safe, and it looks like on reading their report that they've already done toxicity studies in rats,
mm-hmm.
so they've shown that very high dosages doesn't cause harm in rats. They'll have to do that in dogs, but my two before they take it to the FDA to try to get approval to do a clinical study. But often when companies publish positive results, they're well ahead mm-hmm. of what they publish.
Right.
So
right.
if that's the case here, then they've already done those other toxicity studies, and they're probably on their way to the FDA to request
mm-hmm.
request approval to go, or at least soon to be, or planning that, I would guess.
Now, Medicis Pharma has been around for how long?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. It sounds like they're really starting to look at some of the old drugs again.
Well, they don't make any new drugs.
Mm-hmm.
They reformulate old drugs that they know have bioactivity.
Okay.
One of the exciting things is that they are also looking at this technology for oligonucleotides,
mm-hmm.
and those are the chemicals or the molecules that are used to turn off or to gene silence the Huntington gene.
ISIS,
there are
right?
different ways of doing it, but ISIS Pharmaceutical uses these antisense oligonucleotides to essentially get rid of the RNA that then would encode for the toxic or the mutant protein.
Mm-hmm. Now, is MedSys and ISIS in collaboration with this?
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, interesting.
But they're but they don't tell us these things.
Mm, yeah.
But that technology would be great, I think, if it works, mm-hmm. would be great for perhaps making delivery to the brain easier than the present mechanism that I think they're going to be using for clinical trials to put it into spinal fluid.
Oh. So that would also cross the blood-brain, right?
Yes. Well, it's already spinal fluid is you will place it in the fluid then that bathes the brain. Spinal
right.
fluid circulates up through the mm-hmm. brain, so
mm-hmm.
you deliver it that way.
Directly into the spinal.
Right.
Wow.
So giving it by a little gel in your mouth would be a lot better, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. The idea
but,
of
you know,
injecting
that's just
spine.
Me hoping ahead.
Yeah. Wow.
Speaking of ISIS,
yeah.
I've been looking at the American Academy of Neurology abstracts, and there are lots of them. But there are reports there, so it's not published that I've been able to find, but there was an abstract there suggesting that they had an allele-specific antisense that was effective at certainly the cell level. And I think an animal model level too.
Do we know what kind of animal?
I think it was a mouse or a rat.
Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned dogs. They do studies on dogs as well.
They do toxicity studies.
Oh, okay.
So if you have a drug that's ready to
go
to the clinical trial. You try to poison a mouse with it, and you try to essentially poison a dog with it, see how much you can give before it causes a problem.
Okay.
Well, it's better. A horrible thought, but, the only other way to find out is to do that in people.
Yeah, true. I didn't know if maybe they had HD dogs.
Nope, not that I'm aware of. I think they have the sheep and the pigs. I think that the sheep probably turned out to be easiest to work with. What?
They do have HD sheep?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I learn something new every day. I didn't know that.
Well, and they will be, I think, the ones that will be the best to study some of these drugs in and how it... What do they do with these sheep, actually? They put in they're free roaming.
Mm-hmm.
So you put in an electrical monitor under their skin, and so you can actually see what they're doing without seeing them.
Oh, wow.
You can see whether they're up, whether they're down, whether they're sleeping, you know, where they are in the herd.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of things that they're not caged.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing some normal behavior and behavioral changes for those mm-hmm. animals that have the gene.
Interesting. Now, will they be doing any kind of non-human primate? Do you know? Studies?
Well, you're asking the wrong person. They certainly do some studies in non-human mm-hmm. primates, but those are much more difficult. And the sheep brain is bigger than the mouse brain, certainly the mouse and also the non-human primates.
Oh.
So if you want to know how a drug gets into a bigger brain, the sheep is much closer.
Okay.
To the human brain size.
Lots of interesting information.
And it turns out that it's no more expensive to study one of these sheep out in the free range mm-hmm. as it is to study mice in a controlled cage environment.
Interesting. And that's done through the
It just takes longer.
How's it usually done, through universities?
The sheep?
Yeah.
I think there are only a couple of places that are studying them now. I think there's one in Australia.
That makes sense.
And, you know, I don't know where... I am not privy to all the places where they're doing this, but I know there is one in Australia.
Right. Now, I've posted up your website, and if there's anybody out there that wants to ask Dr. Goodman any questions relating to this new formulation of lithium or even about other mood stabilizers, please go to our website at www.hddrugworks.org. There's a plethora of information there about what's new and happening in research and such. Now,
don't miss the HD Buzz article that I have up on the site too.
That's true. Yes, there's another article called "Lithium with a Twist: Get Second Chance for HD" by Carly Desmond on the HD Buzz website too, that complements Dr. Goodman's article. I don't have that link, unfortunately. But if you go to Dr. Goodman's website, it's there, right? That link is
right
at the bottom
yeah
of your article. Yeah. Now, let's talk about other mood stabilizers. You mentioned them in the beginning, but, you know, what do you do when an HD person can't take those normal mood stabilizer drugs? I mean, say they've been through the gambit of, you know, the list of drugs that are available, then do they consider lithium as a potential option, or is that only done in very drastic cases?
I mean, lithium is still used, but it's used in those people who have failed for whatever reason. Other mood stabilizers, I mean, I think this is the most common practice. There may be physicians who use lithium earlier, but at least in our survey, in the algorithm article surveys, lithium was not used very much by that group of international experts. Of course, we didn't specifically ask about manic depressive or bipolar illness. The ups and downs seen in Huntington's are not thought to be true, the same as what bipolar illness is. Bipolar, there tends to be an up and a down that is slower than we see in the mood changes, I believe, in Huntington's or in many of Huntington's patients. The mood changes can be more rapid than what is considered defined for the bipolar disorder, where you have what periods of time, week or weeks of time, in between the ups and the downs of depressive and then more manic or active, irritable phases. So lithium is mostly reserved for a true manic depressive diagnosis, but it is sometimes used in Huntington's when other agents fail, or as an add-on to one of the other agents.
Okay. Let's see. I wanted to also point out to our listeners that if you do go to Dr. Goodman's website, hddrugworks.org, there's also the treatment guidelines there for Huntington's, and you have three algorithms there. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah, and those are
and
really
those are
helpful
practice guidelines, not evidence-based ones, but it's what the majority of Huntington's specialists in Europe and North America and Australia do for Korea, for obsessive-compulsive, and for irritability symptoms.
And then you can also get those as a download on my website, which is www. I'm going to list it. I'm going to post it here too. hopehd-international.org. You can get it there. You can also get it on James Valvano's website, wehaveafaith.org, under resources. We're trying to get those guidelines out to as many people and physicians as possible, especially those who are not as familiar with Huntington's disease. There's a great deal of information and suggestion on the, it's called a flowchart, isn't it? Or is it called an algorithm?
Oh, it's called an algorithm, which is kind of like a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a recipe that has many alternatives, because all of us know that one thing that might work in one Huntington's individual is not helpful for another, and maybe even harmful. So there are options, and none of them are perfect. One has to remember that. I might say also, in terms of teaching or having your local physician learn more, HDSA has done a CME course that's free, that's online, and I've looked at that, and they're very excellent, they're very good, and that will, free CME is always a nice thing for a physician, and they can do it on their own time, and you can find that on the HDSA website. And I'm going to give an advertisement now too for the Huntington Study Group meetings coming up in November in Seattle, my hometown.
Yay.
Here. And through the generous benefactor, funds were donated to do a CME course for generalists as a part of that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're invited to come and sit down and be and learn from some of the experts who are going to be at this meeting.
Okay.
And some of those experts overlap the CME course that you can get online through HDSA.
Uh-huh.
So if anyone wants to tell their physician about coming to a free CME,
mm-hmm,
in November 8th, 9th, and 10th, have them get in touch with me, and the invitation pamphlet will be going out, I hope, within the next couple of weeks. We're working on it.
And that'll be on the HuntingtonStudyGroup.org.
I hope that they will post it. I haven't specifically asked them, but it is a part of HSG. So I believe,
right,
I mean, it's done in collaboration with HSG.
As soon as I get wind of that, I will definitely be posting that on Facebook for HSG. And,
Thank you.
That's fantastic. Will you have it on your website as well?
I'll be advertising it various ways, and I will write something about it. Yes, I will. In answer to your question, yes.
Okay. Well,
and that's happening in November.
Okay, good to know. I just want to thank you, Dr. Goodman. This is your 11th show on Help for HD. So
we're both getting old here. Yes.
Isn't that great? And
yeah,
you have over almost close to 2,600 listeners on your shows. I know people are going back and listening to the archives, and I'm sure they're benefiting from, you know, the information that you're giving us. And I so appreciate you doing that. Being that this is my last show for a little while, I just wanted to make sure and tell everybody to please go back to the show page, look up Dr. Goodman's shows, and revisit them, because there's just an amazing amount of information that can help our HDers. Did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about with the lithium study?
There was one, I think I wanted to say a little bit about the limitations of mouse studies.
Oh, yes, let's do that.
And how my thinking has changed over the years. When I first got active in Huntington's stuff, I was very impressed by mouse studies and positive results. thinking that our mouse models were going to be very good predictors of what might work in people. And over the years, we have found that not to be, we haven't proved that by any means. And there are various indicators that suggest that following mouse model results without asking questions about it and how it may not be something that we can correlate to people.
Mm-hmm.
As Marcy McDonald says, you know, all a mouse is a really a living test tube. They aren't people.
Yeah.
And another recent study that's come out, just to give you an example, a number of years ago, there was Michael Hayden, who is a wonderful scientist in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
He in his yak mouse, got rid of caspase 6, and the mouse didn't get sick.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked like if the mouse was true to the person, we would be able to, if we could do something about this caspase 6, we might cure Huntington's.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the thinking, I think, of the patient community. Everyone was saying, wow, we have something here to hang our hats on. It turns out that, though, a drug for caspase 6 is very, very hard to do. Mm-hmm. If you're a drug developer, that's one thing. But another study has come out, this time in the knock-in mouse of Marcy McDonald,
mm-hmm.
the one that is truer to the human gene,
mm-hmm.
the human chromosome, that if they knock out caspase 6 from that mouse, it doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
It appears not to be helpful. So caspase 6, that looks so important in the yak mouse, doesn't seem to be nearly as important in the knock-in mouse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, which one is more like human disease? Who knows? So we can't, what I'm cautioning is that we can't take a mouse study and jump up and down and celebrate that this is going to take care of Huntington's, because it has a ways to go we need to show before we put it into people or as much as possible, we need to show that the biology or the drug works in more than one mouse model, and that we know pretty much where it works so we can see if it's working in people.
Mm-hmm.
Find a way to do that, because testing in people is going to be the only way that shows whether a drug works or not, or even if we're tackling the right angle. So we have to use a lot of caution with these mouse studies, and so I know my views have changed over the years as I think I've gotten a little smarter, but also a little wiser about not jumping so high.
Yeah.
I couldn't jump as high now as I could 10 years ago anyway, but jumping as high when I hear a good that there's something great in the mouse. We have to take it with a big grain of salt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the therapeutic benefits may not necessarily carry over to humans all the time. Right?
Well, what happens in a mouse model, this test tube, may be very different.
Mm-hmm.
than what happens in the human presentation. A mouse only lives 2 years.
Right.
So never gets the full-blown Huntington.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a gene fragment. Now, the gene fragment may not be true to the disease
mm-hmm.
in people.
Mm-hmm.
And that really hasn't been shown, which mouse model might be the best one to predict drug effect
mm-hmm.
in people. Hasn't been shown.
Well, hopefully we'll get some effect from the NP03.
That would be great. Mm-hmm. I'm optimistic that this one has great, has potential for helping.
Right. Now, how many other drugs right now are being revisited or looked at? Do you know?
I don't know.
Where would we find that information? I mean, how could I?
Well, drug companies don't share that.
In the press. Right. Somewhere.
Well, you know, it's in the press after they've done a lot of work on it.
Mm-hmm.
So there are companies like this, Medesis, that's working on reformulating drugs that they know are effective, mm-hmm. trying to make a larger therapeutic window, a more potent drug.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that there are other companies out there trying to do the same thing. I just don't know them.
Hmm. Maybe some investigation needs to be done there to see what.
But first, you will take a rest.
Yeah, I'm experiencing compassion fatigue.
Yes, I introduced that word to her today because it so much applies to all of us who work with Huntington's family members who care and care for.
Right.
There's a compassion fatigue that overwhelms sometimes.
Well, and how many people out there are caring for parents and children at the same time?
Right.
Yeah. So.
Or other family members. It's not usually one family member. It's more than one, whether it be in the same generation or not.
Mm-hmm.
So there is one person with Huntington's that you care about and care for gives you plenty of compassion fatigue.
I didn't realize that was an actual term.
Well, look it up. Google it.
I will definitely be looking that up.
That one I'll let you do, but I don't want you to do anything else. It takes energy.
Jim Rice says, thank you, Melissa, for knocking yourself out for us. Have a good rest. And I'll be back. I'll be back. Jim also says, Dr. Goodman, thank you for your honesty and caution about these studies. Anybody else have any questions out there? We're going to get ready to, I think, close up the show, unless Dr. Goodman has any more awesome advice for us. I'm not seeing any other questions regarding lithium or anything else. So I think we're good for the show. What do you think, Dr. Goodman? Anything else you want to
say? I think that's good. Thank you very much, Melissa.
Oh, thank you. And again, I'll be taking a short a break until probably mid-October or so, and then I'll be rerunning some of the best of the best shows for you all up there. I would like to again thank Dr. Goodman for being our very special Ask Dr. Goodman guest. He's really been able to give us a lot of good information, and I hope that you all can take this and share it with everyone you know, because it's really important to have to educate yourselves about this information, for sure. So this does conclude the HD View Ask Dr. Goodman show for tonight. And thank you, everyone out there, for tuning in. Don't forget to contact me at helpforhdinternational.org. Find us on Facebook, Help for HD, and the HD View group. Come back and listen to the recorded episodes and share them with your colleagues, friends, and families. Get the free app on the road, Help for HD, at Help for HD International, and we have a face.org. Also available on the app is the original mobile connection to information, education, and resources about JHD and HD. Good night, everyone. Love and peace to you all. Talk to you again very soon. Thank you and good night.